Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com. Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. It's just after 4 p.m. in California now. With 4 hours left until the polls close, California voters are still lining up to cast their ballots on the recall and who will be the Golden State's governor when the dust clears. The recall battle has been quintessential California, direct voter action, hype and Hollywood, celebrity and sex. Specifically, allegations of sexual misconduct by Arnold Schwarzenegger against many women over many years. Lesser figures in politics have been laid out cold over lesser sexual charges. Schwarzenegger appears largely unfazed. Tonight on Point, we ask why. Sex, politics, and the Arnold Schwarzenegger story. We begin tonight with the latest from California and the recall vote. Joining us now live from Sacramento is Tim Grieve, writer for Salon.com. Hi, Tim.
Good afternoon. How are you?
Good afternoon. Well, great. Tell us about the scene out there. What have you been hearing from voters going in and out of the polls? How's it all unfolding?
Well, it's an incredibly busy day out here. Poll workers are all saying it's the busiest they've ever seen. Field Poll, which is the dominant polling organization here in California, predicts voter turnout at 65% today, which would be nearly the levels that you would expect in a hotly contested presidential election, and way above the 50% level that voted when Gray Davis was reelected just back in November.
Now, Tim, are there going to be exit polls that will predict the likely winner? We know that media has gone back and forth on that since the 2000 presidential election. What are you expecting?
Yes, the networks are apparently prepared to do exit polling this time around. The whole issue of polling in this recall has been so difficult because nobody has a good model for what to predict, because there just hasn't been a recall before. So it's a much dicier proposition than usual, but we do expect exit polling.
How many hours from now do you expect we'll begin to hear apparent outcomes?
Well, exit polling will probably be hearing right after 8 o'clock California time when the polls close. As far as real results, who knows? There are 2 million absentee ballots that had come in by this morning, and, you know, hundreds of thousands of more predictably would come in today. And then there's, you know, something like another 10 million votes that will likely come in. So, you know, we'll probably have some results tonight, but it could well be another day or so before we'll know the real numbers.
And those 2 million absentee ballots, is it possible that it will be necessary to count all of them before the result is clear on the recall and who will sit in the governor's chair?
Yeah, in California, absentee ballots get counted out of the box, so those would get counted in any event. But what's interesting about those ballots is many of them likely were cast before the LA Times started breaking stories last week about Schwarzenegger's apparent problem of groping women.
Mm. And how about that story? We're going to be talking about that tonight, Tim, but what's your sense of how much electricity that story has had, how much charge?
It's had a huge amount of charge. Whether it has any sting is really, I think, the other question. It has been story number one out here. It has galvanized the Democrats. It has given them something to talk about that's not Gray Davis, and they need something to talk about that's not Gray Davis. And it's put the Republicans a bit back on their heels, but they also seem to take it in stride and say, it just doesn't matter. Clinton did it. This isn't as bad as Clinton. And what's the alternative? Gray Davis.
And on we go. Tell us about the ballot itself, Tim. I think you've voted today. We know there are many candidates to hopefuls to replace Gray Davis. Is it a manageable ballot or an unwieldy ballot?
Unwieldy would be fair to say. Yeah, I voted first thing this morning, and I was expecting this, but it still took me back. There are 135 candidates on the ballot to replace Gray Davis, so as to avoid giving anyone the advantage of being first alphabetically. The state has scrambled the alphabet and scrambled it differently in each precinct or assembly district or something, so that you don't know really until you see your sample ballot or until you're in the voting box where on the ballot your candidate is going to be. So for instance, on my ballot, Arnold Schwarzenegger and the Lieutenant Governor Cruz Bustamante were both somewhere in the range of number 70, 75, 80, somewhere in there among the list of 135 candidates. But on, you know, a county over, they would have been somewhere else. So it took a lot of time to dig your way through. In fact, Schwarzenegger apparently said this morning that you just look down the list and find the guy with the longest name, and that would be him.
But you had to let your finger drift down that page a long way before you could find those names.
Down three or four pages, actually.
Three or four pages. That is a big ballot. Tim, and your sense, it's a big state with a lot of people, but your sense, at least as in how it's been presented in the media, the mood. Are Californians feeling like, you know, we took matters into our own hands and we're doing what a democracy ought to be doing here, or something else tonight?
Well, I think it all depends on where you are on the partisan spectrum. I think that that Republicans and others who support the recall are absolutely feeling that way, that by God, we're cleaning up Sacramento in at least some sort of vague and general way, and Arnold Schwarzenegger is going to come in and make things better. The Democrats and those aligned with them are feeling very much like this is Florida 2000 all over again.
And for all the uncertainty, does Schwarzenegger still look like the odds-on favorite?
Yeah, for certain that's how he looks now. The last legitimate independent poll that came out just a couple of days ago showed the recall winning 54-41. And Schwarzenegger leading Bustamante about 37-26 or 29, something like that. You know, each of the campaigns does their own polling, but and predictably they'll say that the numbers are, you know, more or less favorable than that. But the last independent poll shows pretty clearly that Schwarzenegger will win and the recall will also win.
Tim Grieve, thanks so much for being with us today.
My pleasure.
Tim Grieve is a writer for Salon.com. He joined us live from Sacramento, California. So the Terminator hasn't won the California governor's race yet, but the last-minute storm of sexual allegations against candidate Schwarzenegger makes for a riveting study of what sticks and what doesn't at the intersection of sex and politics today. Arnold Schwarzenegger has been publicly accused of sexual affront and humiliation by at least 16 women. Arnold's critics say that's enough to keep him out of Sacramento. His supporters say it's all exaggerated, and anyway, past bad behavior shouldn't disqualify him from taking the governor's seat. In California and beyond, Americans are divided and maybe confused over how to consider sexual behavior when a private life intersects with public service. Tonight we'll look at the shifting boundaries of acceptable sexual behavior and how political context can make a huge difference in public perception. Have you seen Arnold Schwarzenegger's sexual rap sheet? Does it merit the fury it's caused? Has sexual license been overblown or underplayed in the Schwarzenegger run for office, and why? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me now in the studio is Florence George Graves, resident scholar at the Women's Studies Research Center at Brandeis University. She is also an investigative journalist and one of the reporters who broke the story of Senator Robert Packwood's sexual misconduct in the Washington Post. Good evening and welcome, Florence George Graves.
Great to be here. Thank you.
Very good to have you. Also joining us from Sacramento, California is Peter Schrag, columnist for the Sacramento Bee and author of Paradise Lost, California's Experience, America's Future. Good evening and welcome, Peter Schrag.
My pleasure.
Thanks so much for being with us. Peter Schrag, to you first. We just heard a bit from Tim Grieve, but give us your sense of how the sexual bombshell of last week in the L.A. Times and its aftermath has played out in this very, very compact and foreshortened campaign. How much of it has stuck to Arnold Schwarzenegger? How much has not?
I think Tim's assessment was correct. I think it has been a big factor. I'm not sure that much of it will stick to him. I'm not even sure whether some of it won't have the perverse effect in a couple of ways of actually helping him. Because the L.A. Times broke the story so late, they're going to be, and they have already been accused of trying to sort of do an October surprise, a sort of last-minute bombshell, a low blow, what Arnold copying somebody else out here called puke politics. And I think the other thing is that I'm not sure that it's entirely a sexual issue as much as a power issue. And I think that, though I have to say, I am puzzled by the large number of women who say, though very few that I know, who say they'll vote for Arnold anyway. In fact, I understand, though I have not seen it myself, that the other day at one of the Schwarzenegger rallies, there was a woman standing at the rally with a sign saying, "Grope me." Whether that's correct or not, I don't know. That may be one of those urban legends, but it wouldn't be. I think it wouldn't be beyond the bounds of possibility. But I think it's going to be interesting to see how large the gender gap is. Interestingly enough, the gender gap, which has always favored Democrats, as you know, where women have always favored Democrats and men Republicans, and that certainly has been true in California. That gap seems to have closed in the couple of weeks before all these disclosures took place.
Arnold was drawing from both sides of the gender line.
But as I say, there was a larger, there was certainly much more male support than female support for him. In fact, Bustamante was winning with women and losing with men, and vice versa for Arnold. But that gap seems to have closed in the weeks just before the disclosures in the LA Times about all the groping and so on. So it's going to be interesting to see once we get detailed exit polls analysis. I assume the LA Times will do it as they often do.
If the gender gap opened up again after the accusations,
right, if it opened up again after those disclosures.
Florence George Graves, there's a lot we want to get into here, but give us your top level assessment of what's going on. LA Times has been bitterly criticized for publishing these allegations just days before the vote. On the other hand, this was a very, very short campaign season. There wasn't much time for anything to come out, and it's clear that that, too, was part of the Schwarzenegger game plan. He's got a big celebrity that he hitched right into a short, sharp campaign. But step even back from that and look at these, at the charges, put them in a kind of context for us. You looked at Robert Packwood a decade and more now.
Right.
The whole country stared in morbid fascination at Bill Clinton's dangling in the wind and impeachment not so many years ago. Now come these charges against Arnold Schwarzenegger, a man cut from different cloth, as Hollywood as you can get, and yet he's headed into public service. So what do you make of these charges? As a reporter, as a women's studies scholar, do they look damning to you? Do they look overwrought?
They look pretty damning to me. If you look at the allegations in detail, and I think most people have not seen the allegations in detail unless they have read the LA Times stories, unless they have read the Premier magazine article that was done few months ago, and unless they've seen the excerpts from the We magazine article.
This is way back in the 70s.
Right. Appalling. The kinds of sexual, what I would call sexual misconduct, just total disregard for women as human beings.
We're not talking, though, rape here, and we haven't seen the word harassment exactly used.
Would you like to give them the examples?
I just want to draw the lines.
Okay.
And we'll look at some of those.
No, we haven't seen rape.
And harassment is a workplace issue, and there's ambiguity. I mean, many of these were not workplace. Others were on a studio set, but it's ambiguous whether he was the boss.
Let me compare it to the Packwood story,
okay,
which, of course, the Washington Post was criticized for not running it before the election, for being too careful, for being too cautious.
Right.
So let's face it, the news media do not seem to be able to win. I thought the LA Times stories, I did not report them. Based on reading them, they seemed quite solid. They did a heck of a job of reporting in a very short period of time. In the case of the Packwood story, you were talking about putting in some kind of historical significance. The Packwood story was done as a direct result of the Anita Hill Clarence Thomas hearings the year before, in October of 1991.
So if a black candidate for the Supreme Court was going to be hung out to dry over these kind of allegations, the white world of politicians in the Congress could not be held exempt.
Well, I don't want to put it that way.
All right, tell me.
I can remember after those hearings, it seemed to me that the most obvious story, follow-up story for a major news organization to do would be sexual harassment on Capitol Hill. No one did it. I started working on that story in April, about 6 months later. The bottom line is this. Before Anita Hill, this would not have been a story. You could not have gotten the Packwood story in the Washington Post.
Because it wasn't considered fair game.
Wasn't considered a fair game. What happened to women was not a story. It was not a big deal. It was not an issue. This was the way it worked. This was, you know, another day at the office.
But is it an irony? We'll come to the details. But here we are, a decade later. All the details are in the LA Times, and it still doesn't seem to matter at some level. Arnold, we hear, is on his way to victory.
Well, I think in the case of Packwood, people were at the outrage built over the Anita Hill Clarence Thomas hearings. In the case of Arnold Schwarzenegger, there is a little fatigue because of the whole Clinton years.
Florence George Graves, Peter Schrag, standby. We'll come and look at exactly that. We're looking tonight at sex, politics, and the Schwarzenegger story. Is California giving Arnold Schwarzenegger a free ride on his reported sexual escapades? I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about sex, politics, and the Schwarzenegger story, about the shifting boundaries of acceptable sexual behavior by private and public figures. You can join the conversation tonight. Does a candidate who's a Hollywood star deserve to be judged by a different standard? What is it about sex and politics that Clinton was impeached and Arnold appears about to be elected? Have you read the details of Schwarzenegger's sexual rap sheet? Does it merit the fury and rejection of California voters, or is it irrelevant next to his readiness to serve? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm joined in the studio tonight by Florence George Graves. She's an investigative journalist who helped break the story of Senator Robert Packwood's sexual misconduct a decade ago in the Washington Post. She's now a resident scholar in women's studies at Brandeis University. From Sacramento, California, by Peter Schrag, columnist for the Sacramento Bee. And now from Annapolis, Maryland, by Susan Reimer. She's a columnist for the Baltimore Sun. Her column today is called No Reason to Recant, Arnold. Good evening and welcome, Susan Reimer.
Good evening.
Susan, we're stepping carefully in here and trying to figure out what's exactly going on, but you have written today in the Baltimore Sun, you watched what happened with Clinton, you've watched what happens with Arnold, you're ready to, even though you're not a Californian, you're ready to support the man, and you say sexual rap sheet be damned here. How do you assess it?
Well, I think that Florence hit the nail right on the head. I think that voters and women in particular are greatly fatigued by this whole topic, and it may be that women have decided that we're going to have to vote based on something else than somebody's sexual misconduct. If they're going to drag it out on everybody to one degree or another, we're going to have to decide whether, okay, do we like this guy's social agenda? Do we like his platform? Do we like who he has around him? Do we like where he says he will take our nation or state? And vote that way, because it looks as though this is going to become politics as usual.
You're essentially saying, Susan Reimer, that if it's a man running for office, you've gotten to the point where you're almost assuming that there's some junk in the closet.
Or and if there isn't, it's not for want of opportunity. I hate to be so cynical, and I hate to, but I guess I am. You'll notice that, as I said in my column this morning, it wasn't Hillary who was having affairs with White House interns. It isn't Maria Shriver who is accused of groping the pool boy. These are guys, and they have some sense that they are entitled to these privileges.
And in this case, maybe the guy of guys and maybe super entitlement in the figure of Hollywood superstar Schwarzenegger. Florence George Graves, here's a fellow journalist and a woman saying, I give up. I'm fatigued by all these stories and charges. I can no longer use this as a filter for male candidates for office. There won't be any left. I'm prepared to vote for Schwarzenegger and lay this aside until women rule the roost.
I say, Susan, get on the couch and talk to a shrink. I think what you have to realize, I guess the first question I would ask you, Susan, is don't you have a daughter? Do you have a daughter? What if it had been you? You probably would care. Have you read the detailed allegations?
Have
you read the Premier Magazine article?
I've read absolutely everything on the topic.
Are you not appalled?
Florence George Graves, it might be useful, as rough as it is, to get into some of the detail here, because I'm sure that many of our listeners have not really heard what's going on.
What's it
all about? I mean, give us some of it.
I don't know if you want to go there, Tom.
Well, I think we have to hear some of it, or otherwise it just sounds like more headlines, people just, you know, flapping their jaws about what? Give us a sense.
Can I tell my husband to turn off the radio where my 7-year-old daughter may be hearing?
You're right, right. Caution, duly warned, but give us a sense of what
people
this
should
legacy
be duly
is
warned.
Here.
These are stories about a man who pulled up a woman's blouse, took a picture of her breast.
Against then, her will.
Against her will. Mm-hmm. Put the picture on the ceiling of his dressing room. And when she walked back, after she ran away and walked back in the room because she was employed, she had to do her job, mm-hmm. she sees him gazing at the picture of her breast and saying, wow, now you know why I wanted to take a picture.
Okay, because, there's one incident in a huge career.
Well, there are at least 17 examples, I believe. Mm-hmm. Another example was a woman who said that she turned him, that he turned her over his knee and started to spank her and said, this is something that should happen to you every morning in your own home. There were allegations of grabbing body parts, grabbing the breast.
It's pretty out there stuff.
He's
sitting in his office, again, allegedly, in the L.A. Times. Another studio boss, who happens to be a woman, comes in with her secretary as they're leaving. Again, this is the woman's story, but Arnold is grabbing her buttocks underneath her skirt and just hanging on.
Right.
She can't get out of the room.
Even worse than what he did is what he said. Talk about coarsening the public discourse. The quotes that are attributed to Arnold in this story by Gary Cohn, who is a former colleague of mine at the Baltimore Sun, and approved by John Carroll, who was my editor at the Baltimore Sun.
Mm-hmm.
I'm astonished that this stuff, I understand why it did, but I'm astonished that this stuff made the morning paper.
And some of it goes way back, but it does in all. It goes right up into recent years, and they quote one woman here saying, did he rape me? No. Did he humiliate me? You bet he did. And there's a lot of just very heavy-handed sexual behavior, clearly from a man who felt licensed, Peter Schrag, to do that. I mean, and maybe even encouraged by his place in the Hollywood pantheon to do
this. Well, I think there's another aspect to this, and that is whether this is really about sex or whether it's about power, and whether, yeah. in fact, much of those displays, and in fact, the flaunting of it, and there's a story, as you may know, where he apparently slept with or had sex with a wife of a friend or an acquaintance, and then essentially called him and told him about it while she was there.
Put her on the telephone.
Put her on the telephone. And essentially, this had very little to do with sex. It had everything to do with power and with domination. And I think that's consistent with a lot of the other things that have nothing remotely to do with sex that we've known or that Arnold himself has talked about. His talk about addressing huge crowds and having them cheer him. I won't even get into the Hitler thing because I don't think it's fair.
But power in its many forms, you're saying, including power demonstrated through sexual display.
That's correct. That is correct. Which is, of course, the same thing that I think a lot of people, in the field parse the impulse for rape. Is that it really isn't about sex, that it's about power.
But the numerousness, the volume of these things is what's striking. And, of course, I mean, the implication is that this is just what the L.A. Times could come up with.
Exactly.
They just go on. The waitress called over to his car, and he grabs her by the breast and really squeezes. She's just stunned and says, if I was a man, I would bust your jaw. And Schwarzenegger saying he thought it was just hilarious. All right, so, and there's a lot more, and a bunch of it goes beyond what we can really even talk about in detail on the air. But now, Florence George Graves, we come up, here he's been a private citizen, a movie star in that kind of, you know, body, sexually charged environment. I'm not saying it's great there, but it is what it is. Now he's moving over into public life. How do Americans think about this? How does the context of an individual particular race influence how it's perceived? I mean, there have been people who have been laid low for a lot less than what Arnold's carrying.
Mm-hmm.
What's the bigger picture here?
What's the bigger picture is that all these allegations, the ones about Clinton, the ones about Packwood, and the ones that Anita Hill made about Clarence Thomas, are part of a revolution. We are in the middle of a revolution for women's rights that started in the 1960s at the beginning of that's the contemporary women's movement. And that movement has said that women have the right to be treated with dignity, that the personal is sometimes the political, that what happens in private is sometimes relevant and often relevant to a public persona, and that we have a right to know about these allegations. Let me take it back even farther, which I was fascinated to find in my research, and that is that Justice Brandeis, before he was Justice Brandeis, Louis Brandeis, wrote a Harvard law school Harvard Law Review article 100 years ago dealing with this very topic. At the time, he was really upset because photographers were coming in and taking pictures at a Deb party or something. And what is, what has happened? And here's what he said. He said that he concluded after a very thousands of words that we should, the public should have information that's legitimate to anyone who is for a, in a public or quasi-public capacity or that has a legitimate connection with a person's fitness for a public office, that whether he's in the office or whether he seeks it.
And so if this is his past private personal record, once the person crosses the line and steps into the public arena, that's fair game.
Absolutely.
Tom, can I jump in here
Yes,
for
please,
a second?
Susan Reimer.
My feeling, I agree with Florence. On all of these things. I was there, Florence, when we wrote all that stuff down 35 years ago in the Women's Caucuses. Whether or not his behavior, his past behavior, is relevant or not, we can assume that the media will find it out and publish it or broadcast it. So whether it's a good thing or not is also almost a moot point now. We're going to find it out if it's there. The point I tried to make this morning was that the Clinton revelations created a sea change in the minds of women. It became clear to us that the good guys weren't necessarily the good guys all the way through, and that we were going to have to, in some cases, sleep with the enemy. That if we wanted daycare, and if we wanted equal pay, and if we wanted the things that matter to us, and they were championed by a guy who we wouldn't have stayed married to for 10 minutes, we were going to have to make a choice. And I think that I'm not sure what's going on in California. That's a crazy place, and I'm 3,000 miles away. But I think women realized after Clinton, if you throw him overboard, you throw his social agenda overboard, and that's what you liked about the guy to begin with.
Well, and the next thing you know, you've got Arnold Schwarzenegger in California. Susan, Peter, Florence, stand by. We've got so many callers, I want to begin to invite them in.
Okay.
I'll be right to you, but Tom's calling from Willington, Massachusetts. Hi, Tom. You're on the air.
Hi. How you doing?
Great, thanks.
I started thinking about this problem of male display when Clinton's escapades came to light. I didn't find his annex as embarrassing as the response of feminists or people who were actually saying that they were for women's rights. Their response to this was just what your previous commentator said. She wouldn't stay married to this guy, okay?
Right.
But she was willing to accept what he was doing because he was in a position of power and supporting her agenda, okay?
So now, how would you read it, Tom? What's your response?
I would read it as alpha males have a different are held to a different standard. I mean, we have alpha males like Bill Clinton and Arnie and JFK and people like this that seem to get away with everything, and the rest of us males are the ones that are married to your commentator who wouldn't get away with this at all.
So are you jealous or are you or what?
Well, what I'm thinking is that we're posing the problem in a sort of a way that you can't see the forest for the trees. You remember in the times of Ptolemy, they had all these ways of justifying why the Earth was the center of the universe, and you could account for the movement of the planets by making epicycles and depicycles and all this sort of thing. And then there's the Copernican Revolution, and you put the sun at the center and put ellipses around it, and everything sort of fell into place and became very simple.
So bring the parallel right up to date here. Are you ready to see a man with Arnold Schwarzenegger's background in office and draw the distinction that Susan Reimer says, hey, if I have to sleep with the enemy, if he's going to pay for daycare, I'm voting for the man, or not? Or do you think that she should be disappointed?
I believe in my principles more than I believe in any politician. Okay, I would definitely not vote for the man.
Tom, we've got it. Peter Schreck, I hear you there. Please jump in.
Yeah, well, I think a couple of things here. One is that I think that all of the allegations about Arnold are consistent with the rest of his sort of authoritarian personality. I think with Clinton, it was a very different thing. And I think it was a very different kind of act. Clinton's act was an act of seduction. This is an act of domination.
Right.
And it's not even clear who seduced whom in the Monica Lewinsky circumstances.
Okay, but what about what these men put their wives and children through?
Well,
that's pretty similar in both cases, wouldn't you agree?
You're saying it doesn't make a difference, Susan, whether it's seduction or domination?
I don't think it makes a difference to Hillary and Maria and to those kids.
Peter Schrag?
I don't know, and I can't put myself in the heads of either one of them, and so I don't know. But it seems to me that for me as a citizen or as a journalist watching this, I think the domination thing is much more germane than the seduction thing, which is, and you can say, well, Clinton was also in a position of power over a White House intern and so on, but I still don't think it's the same kind of thing.
And yet it hasn't stopped the Schwarzenegger bandwagon. He's probably being elected as we speak. I want to get one more call before the break. Shannon's calling from Cambridge,
true.
Massachusetts.
But
Shannon,
I think one thing that's
Shannon, you're on the air. Hang on, Peter Schrag, please. Shannon,
hi,
are you there?
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a comment, and maybe we'd like to hear your thoughts on it. I'd like to go back to something you were saying earlier, the sort of irony that Clinton was impeached for his sexual misconduct while Schwarzenegger is seemingly being voted into office.
Looks that
way. And wonder if that perhaps had something to do with the fact, this is something I heard from people at the time who were, in fact, against Clinton, that it didn't have so much to do with the actual misconduct, but rather with the fact that he lied about it under oath, or if even it could possibly be that a role that's being played here is that one's a Republican and one's a Democrat.
Yeah. Either way, Shannon, to you as a voter, as a woman, which is the worst offense, lying or the acts themselves?
I would have to say the acts themselves, because I think any person in a similar situation as Clinton, for instance, would have lied, of course. I mean, who wants people to know what he was doing in the privacy of his office, which one could argue is not so private given it's the White House. But especially given Schwarzenegger's long history seemingly with this misconduct, which was unwelcomed where it wasn't in the case of Clinton,
mm-hmm.
It's much more alarming in my mind.
Shannon, you've got a keen eye on it, and thanks for your call. Florence, how do you assess the way these two instances have been judged in as it's unfolding?
Well, in the case of Clinton, I mean, it is a very complicated story that we probably don't have time to rehash or go over. But he was also set up by right-wing Republicans who were out to get him any way they could.
Schwarzenegger says his manager says he's being set up by left-wing Democrats.
But the truth is, Clinton was being set up. I've studied this and reported on it in depth, and I'm not sure that Schwarzenegger is being set up. Mm-hmm. I mean, he has not denied most.
Deal?
He has not denied most of these allegations. I mean, at first he said, well, yeah, so I was rowdy. I may have done a few of these things. And then when it started to build, he started to back off, just as Paqua did. It's a very similar pattern. And I will say, Tom, it's not over till it's over. And I would say that there could be, as was the case with Paqua, 15, 20, 30 more women coming forward.
And he has said he'll answer all the allegations after
he's elected.
The election. Florence George Gray, Susan Reimer, Peter Schrag, please stand by. We'll take a short break here. We're talking about sex politics and the Schwarzenegger story. When is sexual misconduct politically lethal? And when does it get a pass? If you defended Bill Clinton, do you have to defend Arnold Schwarzenegger? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about sex politics and the Schwarzenegger story, about the shifting boundaries of acceptable sexual behavior by private and public figures. The question for you, dear listener, is California giving Arnold Schwarzenegger a free ride on his reported sexual escapades, or just judging on different grounds? And how much higher should the bar be set for a public figure than a private figure? How is it that Americans judge what's acceptable sexual background to a public life today? We're at 1-800-423-8255. 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. My guest tonight in Sacramento, California, Peter Schrag, columnist for the Sacramento Bee. From Annapolis, Maryland, Susan Reimer, columnist for the Baltimore Sun. And with me in the studio, Florence George Graves at the Women's Studies Research Center at Brandeis University. Peter Schrag, let me turn to you first and get your assessment as you've watched it firsthand. How do you think California voters have sifted through these claims and collectively, it appears, come to the conclusion that it's okay? I mean, we see the television pictures of the rallies. Arnold Schwarzenegger is surrounded by women, young women. The vote appears to be going his way. How have people thought it through?
Well, it's particularly hard to get into the heads of voters 3 hours before or 4 hours before we know how they're actually going to decide. So we could still once we get the numbers, we may see something very different. I do have to say one thing, and that is that California on these kinds of behavior things has always been, and certainly currently, is a very tolerant state, and it doesn't really matter what the behavior is. Particularly a state tolerant of behavior before the guy gets into office. Now, once he gets into office, I mean, if I were his staff, I think I would permanently tie mittens to his hands.
Maria might be knitting those right now.
Because those little strings in between.
Short strings.
And because I think the culture in Sacramento and the response. Should he be starting to do that? And I don't know how much time he's going to spend in Sacramento. But in the political context, if he starts groping lobbyists or secretaries or whatever who work for the state, I think the response will be very different. I don't think many of those people will simply swallow it. I think they'll scream.
And Florence, what's your sense for California and nationally, after everything the country's been through, and there's been so much press on these things over the years, How do you sense Americans deciding where their line is? Is there any kind of common view? Does it matter if it's a Republican or a Democrat, in office or out of office? What's the context that's critical to the way people assess these kinds of incidents and news?
Well, I think what's most important is that now, in 2003, it's now an issue. It's a consideration. For most of history, it was not a consideration. It didn't make any difference.
Well, you started out with that line, but we're watching Arnold perhaps being elected right now. So how big an issue is it?
Well, I think one of the problems is that people in California, at least the stories I've read, where people are just throwing up their hands and saying this is just tabloid journalism, this is just, you know, last-minute politics, that, number one, people are confusing a lot of these stories with tabloid media. We have become such a the tabloidization of the media in the past 5 years, 10 years, has been so great that people are at the point where they don't know how to make distinctions between real journalism and tabloid journalism. Mm-hmm. I can tell you that doing these kinds of stories are very, very difficult.
Florence, do you really believe that the people in California can't tell the difference between the Los Angeles Times on the doorstep and the National Enquirer and the supermarket checkout line?
Based on what they're saying, I mean, at least what I'm reading in the press, where they're saying these are tabloid stories. This was last minute. These are just, they've cooked this up. This is Gray Davis plot. I mean
the essential thing you're saying is that the people's sensitivity about it is kind of inured because whatever paper it's in, the headlines are always there of some kind of sexual escapade, even if it's the Enquirer or the Globe.
Right, and it's a way of making these issues not important.
Susan Reimer, you don't buy that?
Well, I'm a little skeptical, but I my point of view could be skewed because I'm a newspaper reader and I can make the distinctions, and maybe not everybody can. But I was thinking while I was listening to these guys talk that it may be that elections will be, oh my God, decided on the issues. That after moving into this area of personal conduct and personal history and finding it just such a quagmire between people who have sex with interns and people who have a raft of unpaid parking tickets, it may be that, hey,
Al knows, I assume.
Why do we have to choose?
No, I'm not. I'm just saying that Alan Alda is not on the ballot, okay? So it's Gray Davis and it's Arnold Schwarzenegger for all intents and purposes, and maybe you have to say, I got to go with the lesser of two evils, the guy who most resembles my political thinking, the guy who I think will...
So whatever Louis Brandeis said about the importance of character, you're feeling prepared to vote on issues and upfront agenda. But Susan Reimer, does it give you pause to wonder, you know, how Arnold Schwarzenegger will assess issues of importance to women, to power in society, if that's his background? Or are you willing to believe or suspend disbelief?
He's not going to govern California alone with another woman in an elevator. I mean, he's going to have people around him who hopefully will help him make good decisions and won't let him get out of hand. He'll have handlers.
So you're counting on the minders to keep Arnold in line. Alex is calling from Madison, Wisconsin. Hi, Alex. You're on the air.
I like that word, handlers, for Arnold.
Alex, are you there, my friend?
Yeah, I'm here.
What's on your mind tonight?
I'm 21 years old. I'm a young male voter. Obviously, I just registered a couple years ago and voted in my first presidential election in 2000. And I just want to make the comment that I think that a person in power, a politician especially, we can't have people who are even accused of these kind of sexual crimes in a position of power. And my question to everyone would be, how does it reflect on a young man like myself that's, you know, just starting to get really interested in politics if we were to elect this person?
You mean what's the message to you, Alex, if a groper is in the state house, is in the governor's seat?
Right. What is the message? And also how I want everyone to think about, how would they feel if it's a loved one in our family, you know, your girlfriend, wife, mother, sister, aunt, niece, whatever it is, daughter.
Alex, let me ask you, because we've heard from our guests, it appears that Californians may indeed be electing Schwarzenegger. Why do you think they're doing that?
I think a lot of it has to do with celebrity, and when you're watching the media or listening to the media, not all media, but in general, a lot of the things that you see aren't about issues, but about, well, you know, he says I'll be back and people laugh and that's a great thing, and so he's going to get elected. Whereas Gray Davis is villainized in the media for obviously these things that he did that were inappropriate. He gave all this money away to the electric companies who robbed the state blind, but they blame it on Gray Davis rather than the unregulated electrical companies that was pushed through legislation by people other than him.
But you're 21 and you're saying, don't give Arnold a pass. Give me a model here, me and other voters.
Exactly. Yeah.
Alex, we've got it. Thank you very much for your call, Peter Schrag.
First of all, your reader is very well informed, and I think his issue is very good. I think the one thing, and I think he touched on it, that we haven't mentioned, and that is the fact that there have been, I think, for valid or invalid reasons, I think most more invalid than valid, there has been this enormous rage at Gray Davis. And you have to look at the whole Arnold, the response to Arnold, in that context.
So rage is relative here.
Right. And so, and I think your caller touched on it by saying, there is something of the, which is the lesser of the two evils or whatever. I think the rage and the sort of the anger of a lot of voters, as I say, I think in many cases unjustified with respect to Gray Davis.
But nevertheless, it's there, and you're saying here's a big context, or however they feel about Arnold, they've got another reality that they're
unhappy with. I mean, this whole conversation makes me think that maybe the best thing would be if next year Bill Clinton moved here and ran against Arnold in 3 years.
that would really mix it up. Peter Schrag, we are running out of time. I want to thank you so much for joining us from Sacramento tonight.
Okay, thank you.
Peter Schrag is columnist for the Sacramento Bee and author of Paradise Lost, California's Experience, America's Future. And Susan Reimer with the Baltimore Sun, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Florence George Graves, you're with me in the studio. Last word goes to you here. What lesson do you take away from Arnold's free ride?
Well, I don't know that it's a free ride yet.
We'll see. We'll
As
see,
I said,
but it's,
let's wait and see.
Yeah, all right.
Because Arnold says that where there's smoke, there's fire. I would say where there's this kind of smoke, there may be a forest fire. And let's wait and see.
Watch this space.
And also, we've started the conversation. We've continued the conversation about sexual misconduct.
We'll see where it goes. Florence George Graves, resident scholar at the Women's Studies Research Center of Brandeis University. Thanks for joining us. You can continue this conversation online at On Point Radio in a moment. Someone besides Donovan McNabb is offended by Rush Limbaugh's comments last week. This is On Point. Right-wing radio host Rush Limbaugh has never shied away from controversy, but last week his racially charged criticism of Philadelphia Eagles quarterback Donovan McNabb cost him his job as ESPN analyst. Massachusetts English teacher Michael Obel Omiya was one of many offended by Rush Limbaugh's comments. In this radio diary, he says by bringing race into his analysis, Limbaugh called into question the accomplishments of every African-American in the nation.
Last week, on ESPN's Sunday Morning Countdown, Rush Limbaugh, referring to a quarterback who has admittedly had a difficult start to the season, said, "I don't think he's been that good from the get-go." He added, "I think what we've had here is a little social concern in the NFL. The media has been very desirous that a black quarterback do well." Now, regardless of whether he is correct or incorrect, and he is incorrect because Donovan McNabb has been a very good quarterback, Mr. Limbaugh could have made his point without raising the specter of race. In defending himself last week, Limbaugh said, "This is such a mountain out of a molehill. There's no racism here. There's no racist intent whatsoever." But by raising McNabb's race, Limbaugh has unnecessarily politicized this issue and is guilty of the same crime that he castigates the media for. It was he who made the mountain that he later could not reduce to a molehill. By mentioning Donovan McNabb's race, Rush Limbaugh forced me to question the authenticity of my own accomplishments. As an African-American English teacher at an independent school in Boston, an alumnus of Middlebury College, I've lived and worked among white Americans. I don't want to be judged differently than they are. Still, whenever I succeed or fail, I question whether it has anything to do with race. That is the legacy of over 300 years of slavery, segregation, affirmative action, and racism. I can never be completely confident that someone is patting me on the back for a job well done or because he is surprised that a black man has exceeded his low expectations. I can never be completely confident that an opportunity passed me by because there was a better person for the job, not because blacks to this day still need not apply. For years, I have always rooted for the team with the starting black quarterback or the black coach, not because I am a reverse racist, but because I want America to stop looking through the lens of race. The more black quarterbacks and coaches who succeed, the less their race will be an issue. There are more than 8 black starting quarterbacks in the NFL today, and they follow in the footsteps of pioneers like James Harris, Doug Williams, and Randall Cunningham. It wasn't that long ago that black quarterbacks and coaches were deemed too stupid and too docile to lead. Their success makes me proud and confident that people will judge one another by accomplishments, not race. Then along comes Mr. Limbaugh, who raises doubts and incites controversy. My hope is that one day soon, America will be as colorblind as we like to kid ourselves into believing that we are. I don't think that I shall be alive when that day comes, but I can dream. The recent success of the Boston Red Sox has me dreaming that the day is closer than I think. The way these black men and white men, Dominicans and Koreans, Gentiles and Jews have come together to create a cohesive community gives me hope. Maybe their joyous celebrations will drown out the din of troglodytes like Rush Limbaugh.
Michael Obel Omiya teaches English at the Roxbury Latin School in Boston. He lives in Needham, Massachusetts. Listeners, we'd like to hear from you. How are events in the news affecting you personally? If you have a story, a thought that would make a good radio diary, email us. The address is onpoint@wbur.org. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.